Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I don't think you could write a Finian's Rainbow as is today, because I think the climate has changed. And
right.
That's why I think it is special and it is a gem, because you then get to go back to it and be like, whoa, like it's so of its time. But when done well, it just knocks your socks off.
Welcome, everybody, to a musical theater podcast where we discuss the cultural and emotional impact of some of our favorite musicals in theater history. My name is Jeffrey Scott Parsons. You can call me Jeff. Today, we are getting ready for Black History Month coming up in February by discussing the musical Finian's Rainbow. We'll let you know why in a little bit. Here to discuss this fantastical little show is one of the Broadway cast members of the 2009 revival. He was also on Broadway in, big breath because there's a lot of titles here, Chicago, Catch Me If You Can, Curtains, Ghost the Musical, and If Then. If Then! Remember that show? I'm sure you do. And I would love to cover it one day. Everyone, please welcome Joe Aaron Reed. Yay!
Yay! Hi.
Joe, so grateful you're here.
Thanks for having me.
So take us back in time. Tell us your own little fantastical story. What was going on in your life when you auditioned for Finian's Rainbow? Had you heard about it? Because this show hadn't really seen the light of day for quite some time prior to the encore staging that eventually transferred to Broadway.
Yeah, so I didn't know Finian's Rainbow at all when I was auditioning for it, but I had my first job in New York City proper was with City Center, was Kismet.
Oh.
So when I got the call for Finian's Rainbow, I was like, oh, you know, I haven't done an encores in a while. Like, yeah, I'll totally go in for that. And, you know, I remember auditioning for it and I was just having a lot of fun. You know, not often do you get to audition for like those really old school golden era of Broadway, you know, with the big orchestra and the, you know, just the beautiful vocals. And so it was really nice to audition for something like that, especially because I think the Broadway show prior to that would have been Chicago, which just different, you know?
Absolutely.
So I was really looking forward to doing it once I got the call. And, you know, Warren Carlyle is he's not afraid of choreography. So, like, we're doing a staged concert, but, like, it's staged down. Like, it's
stage the house down.
Stage the house down. Ga, ga, ga. And, you know, we were dancing. And in the Encores production, I played a couple of the roles because the roles were divvied up a little bit differently. So I was one of the baguette singers in Act Two, and then I was Henry, the kind of servant boy, right. And we didn't have any real children, so it was, you know, it was a little bit different, and we had a different, you know, we had a different leprechaun, Og, you know, things like that were different. But yeah, it was a wild time, kind of going into a show that I didn't know, and then at the time seeing the show come together was like, oh wow, like it's pretty relevant. Because, you know, we just had the housing crisis. So this idea of, you know, doing the show where we do discuss credit and things like that. It was interesting. Yeah.
And then when did you, because you've done other shows, like, did you have a feeling, oh, this is going to go to New York, or is it always just,
well, you know, the funny thing is I remember, again, going back to my first encores, which was Kismet, you know, that was Brian Stokes Mitchell, Marin Mazey. I mean, we thought this is going to go. Like, there was just no way that it wasn't. Like, they were coming back together again from their Kiss Me Kate days. Like, this is going to go. And it didn't go anywhere. And we were like, oh, okay. So then Finian's Rainbow happened. And we were all like, what is this show? It's so wild. Like, it's such a kooky, quirky little, like, it's a gem of a show. But it's definitely, like, it's, and especially different for the time, it was out there. And we just thought, like, well, this will be a fun, you know, 2.5 week gig. Like, no biggie. And then the next thing we knew, we were getting the call, like, we're going to Broadway. We were like, what? Okay. You know, I'm not going to turn
it
down.
Are you sure?
Yeah, exactly.
That's incredible. How fun. So then how quick was that turnaround? Did you have to wait for a theater, or?
You know, the theater waiting game is always the one of the hardest things in New York. Luckily, though, we ended up, I think we did that. We started rehearsals. I want to say that was in like January, February. And by September, October, I was in rehearsals for Finian's again. Now, at the time, I was doing double duty because I was doing Tin Pan Alley Rag for Roundabout. And so I would go to rehearsals. That was like at the end of the run. And then I would go to rehearsals for Finian's Rainbow. That was like September, I think. So, you know, all in all, I would say it was maybe like 7-8 months tops.
That's crazy. That's not bad at all.
No, awesome. No. Honestly, like, one of the things about working a lot in the theater is, you know, it's tough emotionally. It's tough on your body. It's tough. So I welcome little breaks. You know, I think some people get too freaked out.
I'm never going to work again.
Yeah. And I mean, I just knew that I would. No.
When you got it, you got it.
Flaunt it. But yeah, it was just one of those things. Like, when I got the call, I was really excited because I loved working with the cast and the creatives of Finian's. So to be able to be reunited. And then, you know, I will say that one of my concerns when I got the call, when they were like, we're going to the St. James. And I was like, oh,
that's a
big space, you know? But yeah, let's go. Let's do it. And I loved it too, because it was a little engine that could, and had a lot of heart. And surprisingly, it was so well received that it was a pleasure to do.
Yeah, you guys got glowing review after glowing review.
Yeah, it was wild.
Unfortunately, the run wasn't too long. You opened at the end of 2009, right?
Yes.
And then you made it through the holiday season, but then ended up closing, I think, in January.
That's what it was. Yeah, right after the new year. And that was tough, especially when you do, you know, it's not technically an out-of-town tryout doing it at Encores, but when you do something pre-Broadway and then it goes to Broadway, it really does feel like your baby. And so when you get that closing notice, and, you know, I know a lot of producers really try, if the show is not doing well or is going to close, they try and give you kind of as much notice as they can. But I remember we didn't have much notice at all, maybe a week or two, tops two.
Yikes.
And, you know, it's tough when that's your job. But at the same time, I remember we were playing to houses where, you know, the St. James is such a massive space. And, you know, there were two balconies. And so I just remember they stopped even opening the top balcony. So in some ways we were disappointed, and in some ways we understood.
Yeah. Well, like you said, when you came in contact with the show, it's bizarre. And I wouldn't say it's a tough sell, but it's probably difficult to convince people that it is relevant to their lives until they maybe actually get into it and be like, oh, there's some really cool progressive things about this show that I had no idea.
Correct. And I think too, you know, not as much as now, but certainly I've seen the progression from when I first got on Broadway in 2007. I've seen the progression of, or some might say digression of Broadway, you know, being about, you know, movies turned musicals and jukebox musicals. And, you know, Finian's Rainbow, it was such a big deal in its time, right? And that's when a lot of even musical theater songs were on the pop charts. So it is a hard sell, you know, in today's climate, not necessarily because of the subject matter, but because of name recognition. We're a society that's built on branding. And Finian's Rainbow, people haven't heard of. SpongeBob, they have.
Fair enough. Period. Let's take a moment, and by moment I mean several, to talk about the brand of this show, because it requires a bit of context, which is always my favorite to do, a little historical context. So this show is written by three guys who you probably think you've never heard of, listeners, and yet you absolutely know who they are. First up, let's talk about E.Y. Harburg. Yeah, that's his official name, E. period, Y. period, Harburg. Better known to everyone as Yip. And you may think, I've never heard of this guy. He's a great lyricist, but I don't know a single lyric. Yes, you do. Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Ding dong, the witch is dead. Yeah, somewhere over the rainbow, for crying out loud. E.Y. Harburg was the lyricist for Wizard of Oz, on top of many other great songs out of Hollywood. And his two big, I mean, he had several, but his two big Broadway ventures were Finian's Rainbow, which was a huge hit. When this opened in 1947, it was a big, big hit. And the shirt that I'm wearing today, Flahooly! Exclamation point. Have you ever heard of Flahooly?
No.
Okay. It's absolutely bonkers. So, Joe's dying.
I love that you have merch, though.
Well, on my Patreon last year, we often go to what I call the flop shop.
Ooh.
Where we discuss some flop musicals that maybe would never see the light of day and probably shouldn't, but are really fantastic curios. And the one that I picked, or one of the ones that I picked in January of last year, was Flahooly, which was also written by E.Y. Harburg. Now, what he would do with these Broadway ventures is create a little piece of wacky satire. And we talked, I think, a little bit in one of our earlier episodes on Heathers about what the difference is between, say, satire and parody, right? And in the 30s and 40s, musical theater, satire was very, very common. The way that they kept it in satire, though, is by keeping the music earnest. The music wasn't the joke. And in satire, in maybe modern musical theater, you have this like satirical story or script, but then the music becomes a wink, wink, joke, joke, we're doing a musical.
Totally.
They never did that back then, which is how you end up with a show like Finian's Rainbow, which takes place in the made-up state of Missituckee and yet has glorious music like Old Devil Moon and How Are Things in Glockamora. Like, that's just not a recipe we really make anymore nowadays. But I love it. I don't know. It creates a really special product. Does that make sense?
It does. It totally makes sense. And I think that part of the reason you mentioned earnestness, I think that we as a society aren't as earnest as we once were. I mean, and that's just because the progression in technology. You know, we have so much more access to the world at large.
Do you know what? I wonder if like the closest we get to it nowadays is maybe something like Ted Lasso, right? Where it's like the satire is like almost on toxic masculinity in the sports world. And because of that, it's filled with musical theater references, you know, in that is its own commentary.
Totally. But even in something like, and I love Ted Lasso, but even in something like Ted Lasso, the reason why Ted Lasso works is because everyone around Ted is not that.
True.
The show, he is changing hearts throughout the show, right?
You're so right.
Whereas, you know, something like Finian's Rainbow or just shows in general or society in general at this time, the majority of people were that kind of earnest, that kind of naive, you know.
Or they were willing to go into a story where everyone just operated this way. It wasn't like Elf.
Correct.
Where Will Ferrell is the one person.
Correct.
In this craziness.
Which I think is amazing. I mean, that device, it makes for such great storytelling. Yeah. And I think anyone who writes off you know, the kind of earnest protagonist, I think is actually doing themselves a disservice, because we need more of that in society.
I think,
you know, I don't know the kinds of conversations that you're having outside of this podcast or, you know, on the island, but I do think that the majority of people that I talk to there, it feels like society is crumbling and everyone just wishes that there was a little bit more, you know, we have social media, but we wish that there was more real connection, you know? Yeah, I welcome more of more earnestness in life.
Yeah, I completely agree. Amen. Hey, listeners, have you tried Factor yet? Remember Factor Meals? They were supposed to send me a box to try out, but they don't ship to Hawaii, so now I'm stuck with my Taco Bell. And now it's up to you. It's up to you to try it and let me know how it is, because it's May, and we can't eat like it's the holidays anymore. We're trying to get our summer bodies together, and Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting food. You can choose from 6 menu preferences to help you manage calories, maximize protein intake, avoid meat, whatever you want, it's here. Head to factormeals.com/musicaltheater50, that's musical theater with an ER, and use code musicaltheater50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code musicaltheater50 at factormeals.com/musicaltheater50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So the composer of Finian's Rainbow, we talked about the lyricist, the composer Burton Lane, what a talented fella.
Totally.
On top of Finian's Rainbow, he also composed On a Clear Day, You Can See Forever.
Clear day.
Sing it, Barbara. Anyway, just he has such an interesting ear for melody. Even I keep going back to Old Devil Moon, but the places that song goes are always so surprising to me and chill inducing. Like the way that the chorus builds it, his melodies are just really impressive. And he also, in a weird way, has a Wizard of Oz connection because he discovered Judy Garland. He heard her sing, right? Like, pat yourself on the back, Mr. Lane. He heard her singing and then invited, who was it? Louis G. Mayer? I don't know, somebody to come down and hear her sing. And that's how she, you know, got signed into a motion picture contract and unfortunately probably addicted to speed. But like that's beside the point. So thank you, Burton Lane, for all of your contributions. Book writer Fred Sadie, honestly, probably working pretty closely with E.Y. Harburg to figure out this zany, crazy world. So these are our three fellas. Now, when the show opens in 1947, big hit. In the same season, Brigadoon. Interesting, right? So you've got these two fantasy-filled musicals with Irish or Scottish traditions tied to them in the same season. Finian's Rainbow is the bigger hit. It runs longer. At the Tony Awards, they didn't have Best Musical or anything at that point. I think they had, was it the very first Tony Awards?
Oh.
1947? Because the first Best Musical was in 1949. Yeah, maybe it was the very first. But in 1947, they gave the guy who played Og, the leprechaun, a special Best Featured Actor award. They gave a dual award for choreography to Michael Kidd, who had done Finian's Rainbow, and Agnes DeMille, who was doing Brigadoon. So they shared it. But all in all, Finian's Rainbow was this juggernaut that created a lot of songs that were then heard on the radio, like you mentioned earlier. Now, as time goes, however, Finian's Rainbow becomes less and less known, and Brigadoon becomes more and more well known. And so now I would say by 2024, Brigadoon is probably the title that people recognize more, thanks to Schmigadoon on top of it, right?
Sure.
But it's interesting how they flip-flopped. Now, according to how you understand it, why do you think that is?
I'll give you my honest, you know, opinion and guess.
Please.
You know, from my understanding, you know, obviously Finian's Rainbow is more about the integration of white people and black people within the story and just casting in general. And my understanding of Brigadoon is it's white.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that over time, while that was a big hit, because again, relevancy, right? 1947, I believe that Finian's Rainbow was like one of the first integrated choruses.
The first
integrated chorus on Broadway. So it made such a splash, right? But then as time went on, the relevancy of Finian's Rainbow maybe dipped a little bit as it became a little bit harder to kind of figure out how to do the production and this, that, and the other. So it wasn't done as much. Whereas Brigadoon is just like this fantasy Scottish, you know, moment.
Put it up like it is.
Exactly.
You have to fix it.
Copy paste, right? But then I also think with time, you know, as a black actor, mixed actor, biracial actor, we got more shows, you know, there were more shows that were written for black people. And I think that because, you know, a lot of people, the kind of racial topography of Finian's Rainbow can be a bit difficult to traverse. And for some people, especially producers, I think it comes down to, do I want to try and figure out a way to mount this where I'm not going to get lambasted in the press? Or do I just do X, Y, and Z? And so I feel that we ended up, you know, black people ended up, we ended up getting more shows that were easier to mount, easier to sell, more in line with what was happening in terms of pop music. Times changed.
100%. It's really interesting to read historians' takes on it and also just kind of see the facts as you've presented them. When Finian's Rainbow first was presented on Broadway, it had a really difficult time finding backing because it was presenting a musical with an integrated cast. Before then, you had your showboats where you had a black chorus and a white chorus and they were in the same show, but they weren't like sharing the stage together and shaking hands and singing and dancing.
I've done a production of Showboat. And we, like, nary the two shall cross. Just different, yeah.
That's fascinating. Just, like, structurally, it's built in there.
Correct.
Because people could not handle it.
Correct.
So E.Y. Harburg, who, as you'll find out as we keep talking about this show, was a wild progressive. Tried really, really hard to find backing for this show. Could not do it. So they went from living room to living room at every Manhattan skyrise apartment to try and find liberal rich people who would put their money into Finian's Rainbow. Ultimately, they do that. They just get that many people involved that then they could bring the show to the stage. So we're talking about not only a show that is presenting the audience with something they've never experienced before, but a story that is also looking straight into the barrel at bigotry and capitalism and greed and kind of all the things, to quote another show that you've done, that are near and dear to our hearts here in this country. So this was easily the most liberal show of maybe the 1940s.
Sure.
I mean, maybe with the exception of South Pacific, but maybe even more so than that, just because of the visual of this integrated.
I think so. And the way in which they really, like you said, they're right down the barrel. They're not mincing words. Sure, they're putting lovely orchestrations with it, but they're being very clear on what they're trying to say. And that's what I think the show does do a very good job of. It doesn't shy away, as beautiful as it is, it doesn't shy away from its themes.
Now, one of the themes is explored because one of, like, the most bigoted character in it, who is a white senator, gets magically turned into a black man in order to like learn a lesson of what it's like to be somebody you don't, or maybe somebody you hate, if you just want to say it that, like that. It was originally done via blackface. And I think that element alone painted this show pretty quickly as being a dated and racially offensive show.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you have a show with blackface.
It would, if the show is like, one of the premises is blackface to learn a lesson. I mean, that's, we would call that canceled now. You know, like that's just, you're not, no one's going to touch it.
And I think that that definitely played a part. I also really enjoy what you said about the risk that it is to do theater in general. It's just a lot easier not to take a risk. I think about this all the time, how Song of the South was just like a really like a big black mark on the Disney Corporation. And instead of like learning their lessons and being like, ooh, thank you for that feedback, we're going to try this again, but do it the right way, they just never made another movie that kind of dealt with those issues until Princess and the Frog.
Correct.
Like that's unfortunately the reality, is that sometimes if producers get it wrong, instead of trying it again, they're just going to do Brigadoon.
Absolutely. And it's a sad, because I think theater, you know, we were talking before we even got on this about how, you know, how kids, they want to come in and they want to escape, right? Mm. And I think theater can be an escape. But I also think that theater is meant to push boundaries. It's meant to get people asking questions that they may not ordinarily ask themselves. And, you know, if you're lucky, you will find shows that are able to do both. And I think Finian's Rainbow is one of those shows that is able to do both. It's able to ask, you know, not, yes, it asks you questions, but it makes you ask yourself questions and it makes you think of things differently, on top of giving you beautiful choreography and beautiful orchestrations
and a lot of laughs too, because
a ton of laughs.
The satire is funny.
A ton of laughs. And it's unfortunate that people look at things like that and they feel too scared or intimidated, maybe, by choosing to mount something like that in favor of something that's just palatable. Palatable is great for good fun. You know, I just bought tickets for me and my kids to go see 42nd Street down in Long Beach. You know, like I'm, you know.
OMTW.
I think, yeah, exactly, exactly. I think it's, palatable is amazing. You know, it has its place. But I think if all commercially viable theater, if it only becomes palatable, and that's the, those are the commercial ventures, then whose hearts and minds are we changing?
Right.
Who's, how can theater, especially in the digital age, right? We've got film and television, but now there's streaming, and now there's, you know, YouTube and Hulu and Slack and Sling. And
TikTok.
I mean, there's just, it's endless possibilities, right? And theater, while I think is a completely different experience from those things, if they only have palatable options, how are we, I think that actually makes theater more redundant.
Mm-hmm.
What's the point in spending $100+ on a Broadway ticket when I can just wait for it on Disney Plus?
Right. No, you're exactly right.
So I think it's, we need to be thinking more about the impact of theater and not just filling a theater with whatever, so that way people come to see it.
And it's one of the reasons why I love doing the show so much, because when you look back at our history, all of a sudden you don't feel so alone. You see that E.Y. Harburg had the exact same problem in 1940s as we're having now. And I would hope that it brings a sense of, once again, of connection to our past and understanding that it might be more of a human problem than just like the fault of one president in the space of 4 years who has ruined every, you know what I mean? Like, it isn't that. It's something that we've always been working with. And the answer isn't just to like burn it all down and build it all up. I saw plenty of things burned to the ground last year, and I can tell you it's not quite the fresh start you think it is.
Correct.
So these are things that we have to contend with, and they did contend with back then. So like, welcome to the party. This is the game. This is what we're doing.
Yeah.
This is the work we're doing.
Yes. At least we are afforded the opportunity to do it if we choose so.
Amen. Here's the call. Please take it.
Correct.
So the other thing that you said a while back that I wanted to touch on is that you said that as musical theater progressed, people of color got different shows.
Yeah.
More shows. Different kinds of shows. And I would add to that shows that were written for audiences of color.
Sure.
Because at the end of the day, I'm not too sure Black people would go to Finian's Rainbow and feel like it was written for them.
No.
You know what I mean? They already know the lesson that the bigoted senator's learning.
Yeah, I think, you know, we did have Black people that came to see Finian's Rainbow, right? And I think that a lot of that comes down to their enjoyment of it. I think a lot of it comes down to the performances that are given. You know,
yeah, when you want to go see Chuck Cooper and Terry White.
I mean, when you have Chuck Cooper and Terry White, you can't really go wrong because they get it. You know, they are it. They've got that je ne sais quoi that lives deep down in their gut that's on fire that they have, you know. But if you had someone else playing those roles, it might not land like that. And, you know, even being a Black person in the show, there were moments where you were like, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty take on sharecropping. You know what I mean? Like, we at the end of the day, we are dealing with sharecroppers.
Hello.
You know, so it's beautiful. But I think you're absolutely right. I think the shows that finally came along were more for, you know, you look at the Jelly Last Jams, you look at the Ain't Misbehavin's, you look at where it's, there's a grittiness there that is innately in the piece more so than something like Finian's, where it's added by the person who created it.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. The person who's performing it, the people who are doing it, but in the... the DNA is something for
correct
this audience.
Yeah.
Well, let's go through the show a little bit because I do want people to, you guys, I'm telling you, you might not see this show. And so I want you to
probably
know what it's
won't.
All about. Yeah. I'm going to now, it's a tradition on the show for me to tell the guest about this crazy metaphor I use called black ketchup. My great grandma was from, like, you know, the world wars. And so she lived very frugally. And there's a story that we often tell in our family about how she had these bottles of ketchup in the basement and they had turned black, right? The ketchup inside
it
was
oxidized.
Fully black. Yeah. And we had like aunts and uncles who said, you know, hey, grandma, maybe it's time to throw out these black. No, it's fine. You know what I'm, you never know when you'll need it for an emergency. And sometimes I wonder. Emergency black ketchup. And sometimes I wonder if we look at some of our old shows and we're like, oh, we don't want to throw that away. But at the same time, do we want to consume it? You know, which of these shows are black ketchup? Things that we're very grateful that they were nice and rosy red when they existed, but now maybe it's time to put them away. I don't know. Is Finian's Rainbow in that category?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But I also don't see it making money anytime soon.
No, no. I mean, I think it's... this is one of the things that I loved about living in London and doing theater in London. There was so much more subsidized theater there. And I think Finian's Rainbow has many strong messages. And I think, you know, if we had a more subsidized situation, I think Finian's Rainbow would fall perfectly into a season like that. Because I don't think we should get rid of it. And I do think, and I will say, you know, obviously we did the 2009 revival and we handled the senator turning black very differently than the original. You know, I think it proves that, like, you don't need blackface and you can do it like that. And it's just as effective as long as you have two people, you know, a senator that you hate and a black senator that you love. I think you're fine, you know?
Ding, ding, ding.
So I think we kind of proved that it can work. And the message can still get through. Do I think it's ever, you know, do I think it's going to be make a massive, huge success, you know, on some big scale? No, I don't. But I don't think every show has to do that. And I think if that is I think that's part of the problem with Broadway is that becomes the aim, right? Who's got the next big machine that's going to turn out 17 tours at a time and, you know, cross the pond and then go down under and then open in Germany and then swing back around, you know? It's if that's what theater has to be, then there are many shows that are black ketchup. But I think I don't think that Finian's Rainbow is black ketchup. I think Finian's Rainbow is going to be that bottle of ketchup that sits on the shelf, and when it's time, it's time. And it might only be a little tiny jar of it, but it'll be time.
I love that. So the show begins, like I said, in this place called Missituckee. It's a made-up state in the United States. More specifically in Missituckee, Rainbow Valley. Something I know about from living here on Maui, I gotta say. In this place, like you said, are sharecroppers. People who are allowed to work the land in exchange for basically giving all of their profits. It was not a great time. But in this made-up fantasy land, the sharecroppers are both black and white. They live in perfect harmony. Everything's good. The land that they are working is owned by this guy named Woody, who has just got done serving in World War II. So just like Brigadoon, another show where we're talking about guys coming back from the war. Like, this is the most important topic.
Yeah, it's a hot
on
topic.
Everyone's mind is like, what do you do after the war? So this guy's coming back, and he doesn't really feel, even though he owns this land, he doesn't really feel like being there. He's exploring Alaska. He's going to all of these different places. And so he is kind of like a guy with a guitar who wants to sing a song and move through the land.
Yeah.
He has a sister who is mute and only speaks through dance.
Yes.
This is not even the craziest part of the topic. Tell me a little bit, because we're going to now jump into dance. Tell me about working with Warren Carlyle, who has become kind of the guy for staging revivals of old musicals. Why do you think he's trusted with that? Does he have a sensibility that's matched to traditional musicals?
I do. I mean, you know, remember, he kind of came up under Susan Stroman's wing. Mm-hmm. And I think he is a man that loves beauty in whatever essence that manifests itself, beauty. He has this eye, he can just see things beautifully. And so the way these, I think with a lot of these revivals, if you're going to do them, there has to be something fresh about them, right? There has to be something that's like, that makes it exciting. And I think he creates such beautiful pictures on stage, like visually just, there's so much going on, but in such a beautiful way that I see why people entrust him. Mm. He's able to take something that could be dated, could be clunky, could be whatever, and he makes it into this thing that just, it's like a breath of fresh air, and it takes your breath away all at the same time. And then the next thing you know, it's like the button of this huge production number, and you've seen 4 million things happen, and you just love all of them.
Yeah, it lives, it breathes.
He's very classically trained, right? And so a lot of his choreography is very balletic, very ballet-based. And so even in movement of the time, there's still this sense of like line and beauty. So it's just so aesthetically pleasing. And as a dancer, when you're doing that kind of choreography, it feels good. I'm not saying it's easy, because there were definitely moments where my hip flexor was like, I hate you. But but it was, you feel beautiful doing it. It just feels, it's just all beauty.
And that's beautiful.
All right.
So you got the mute sister Susan who dances in order to talk, and the people are able to translate her feet and say, oh, this is what she means. There's kind of a crisis happening right now in Rainbow Valley, where this senator has said that there are all these back taxes that have to be paid from the sharecroppers. The sharecroppers are like, excuse me, when did this happen? And of course it's this senator, because what he wants is to gobble up the land for himself so that he can sell it to the government to build a dam or do whatever they want with it. All of this mistrust of leadership and so on and so forth.
Relevant? I think so.
Right, perhaps. The answer to all of this is the citizens of this place say, well, Woody is coming back in town. Here he comes. In fact, here he is.
That's right.
He'll have the answer. And he does have the answer. He has the money that he was given. after leaving the war, kind of what would be your like discharge pay or something like that, that he can then put towards the taxes. Unfortunately, it's not enough. Fortunately, there are two new people who wander into Rainbow Valley, Sharon and her father, Finian, who have come from Ireland. These are immigrants who are coming to Rainbow Valley in the United States to build. I mean, it's the immigration story, the classic immigration story.
By foot.
We're going to get, come here. Say what?
By foot.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. They walked all the way from Ireland. You're right. Oh my gosh. They were just in New York and then they walked all the way to Mississippi. And it's to, you know, follow the yellow brick road, for lack of a better term. Specifically, Finian has found a pot of gold. He found it in Ireland and he wanted to come to America to bury that gold near Fort Knox, because he believes that the reason that America is the land of promise is because they found all this gold in California during the gold rush, brought it over to Fort Knox, buried it, and then from this from this fertile soil grew this prosperous land. This is the plot of Finian's Rainbow.
When you say it like Finian, that.
So Finian has brought this gold to bury so that they can become millionaires. Sharon is such an interesting character, and I can't ever speak too much about the incredible Kate Baldwin, who just, because right here at the beginning of this show, she has song after song after song, and you better enjoy listening to Sharon's voice. And is there a voice more enjoyable to listen to than Kate Baldwin's?
It was just like, I loved being backstage. I mean, yes, we were on stage with her too, but just being backstage and hearing that beautiful,
effortless.
It feels like if her voice, like if I could put a fabric, it would be like a Laura Piana, like just so,
I love you so much.
Soft. You just want to wrap yourself in it. Like, I just want to wrap myself in her tones, her dulcet tones.
Her dulcet tones. Absolutely. But Sharon is also, I mean, she's a fiery redhead too.
Yeah.
And she's always calling her father out for his foolishness. There's this great line where he said, you know, America is the place where you can be anything. Irishmen can come here and become, and she cuts him off and says, policeman.
Yeah.
You know, like she is such a sassafras, and I love it. In addition to the gold, they just happen to have the exact amount of money that Woody doesn't have to pay all of the taxes. So the two of them together, boom, the senator has to leave and not have the land yet. The other thing that brings them together through this exchange of money is Sharon and Woody have a little romance going on. A little love connection. And that's why they get to sing the perfect song, Old Devil Moon, which is just romantic and sexy. I mean, Chet Walker singing Old Devil Moon, it doesn't get any better. Now, the other thing that we haven't talked about is that a leprechaun has followed Sharon.
Vengeance!
Oh my gosh, this plot is just amazing.
It's thick.
A leprechaun has followed Finian and Sharon to Mississippi because he needs his gold back. If he's away from his gold too long and everybody uses the wishes that are attached to the gold, he becomes mortal, and he is not interested in that. He is a leprechaun. He wants to stay a leprechaun. The leprechaun in your production was played by the only person who should probably play this role, Christopher Fitzgerald.
Oh, a dream.
Moving on.
A dream.
All of these songs, in addition to being gorgeous, you've got How Are Things in Glaucomora, you've got If This Isn't Love, they are also filled with just the most clever lyrics you could ever hope for.
Yeah.
What's the one in If This Isn't Love? It's like, my heart needs a plumber, or If This Isn't Love. I didn't write this one down. Hold on. I'm going to look it up because it's a good one.
This Isn't Love. Then winter is summer. If this isn't love, my heart needs a plumber. If this isn't
I think you're right.
Dream, then if I should wake up, a kiss ain't a kiss, it's a crisis, man. If this isn't love, I think, maybe. I could have just cut and pasted a lot of different lyrics from that song into one.
Almost
yes.
There,
winter
there.
Is summer. His heart needs a plumber.
Oh my gosh, you're exactly right. Well done.
Thank you.
Pulled back from the recesses of your brain. I am impressed. If this isn't love, then winter is summer. If this isn't love, my heart needs a plumber. I'm swinging on stars. I'm riding on rainbows. I'm busting with bliss, and I'll kiss your hand if this isn't love. Oh, it's such a cute song.
It really is a cute song. I really liked performing that song because that's also one of the big ones where everyone, it felt like everyone in the show was together in one big production number. It didn't end act one, but it was in the middle of act one. And I remember it was a hard number to do, but I remember it being just like full production value with the lifts and the dresses flying and this. And it was just, it was great.
So there's this budding romance. Of course, Woody doesn't want to settle down. And to make matters worse, Og the leprechaun sees Sharon and is immediately struck by her because he's slowly becoming more mortal, which means that he's going to fall in love with a nice young lady. We should also mention, can we talk about the shuffling scene? Because I think it's really interesting.
Yeah.
So now back in Washington, D.C., we got this senator who has a houseboy. Is that right? No, like a servant. Like
a servant.
A man servant. And he doesn't think that he's black enough.
Correct.
So what the senator does is like, no, I need you to do the old shuffle and sort of step. And he shows him how to be black, basically.
Yeah.
It's very uncomfortable.
It's very uncomfortable. I got to tell you, I played that role in the Encores version and like not performing it, but I remember rehearsing it. I was like, oh, it just felt so cringe. Because of when you look through at these old scenes and this dialogue through the lens of today, it is going to feel cringe. But that's the same way as if we look at our fashion from when we were younger. You know, like, it's cringe, right? But in context...
Doesn't mean it wasn't true.
It doesn't mean... Exactly. And in context, it really does work.
Because what's the great thing is that when he realizes his plan isn't working to take over Rainbow Valley, he has heart palpitations and needs his medicine. So he then asks Henry, his servant, to go get his, you know, his meds. But in a truly beautiful poetic justice moment, Henry starts shuffling like he's supposed to. And takes much longer than maybe he would have regularly to get the medicine.
That's right, because he's like, really, eyes are coming, eyes are coming.
it's really fantastic, and it makes the cringe worth it, because you're like, what you wanted, sir?
Yeah, exactly. It's the payoff is there, and that's where it's like, we are all feeling uncomfortable watching this, right? As an audience, you're feeling uncomfortable. But then when you get that payoff, you're like, oh, okay, we can all breathe.
Thank goodness that's where we were going.
Yeah, exactly. We weren't sure, but now that we know, we're safe.
Yeah, but talk about risk, right? We keep on talking about the risk.
And imagine that in 1947.
I can't even imagine. It may have even played differently where they weren't cringy. They're like, yeah, he probably should learn how to do the shuffle.
Totally.
You know?
Totally.
This guy's in charge. Listen to him. And then to see the comeuppance may have been a real surprise.
Totally. Absolutely. Well, and then that plays into, you know, Yip being, you know, so leftist leaning and, you know, the way in which they created the show. The show in 1947 would have been much more in your face because they're basing it on those times.
Yeah. Great point.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, listeners, have you tried Factor yet? Remember Factor Meals? They were supposed to send me a box to try out, but they don't ship to Hawaii, so now I'm stuck with my Taco Bell. And now it's up to you. It's up to you to try it and let me know how it is, because it's May and we can't eat like it's the holidays anymore. We're trying to get our summer bodies together, and Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting food. You can choose from 6 menu preferences to help you manage calories, maximize protein intake, avoid meat, whatever you want, it's here. Head to factormeals.com/musicaltheater50, that's musical theater with an ER, and use code musicaltheater50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code musicaltheater50 at factormeals.com/musicaltheater50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Before we end the first act, is it Finian who gets all of the children excited, or is it Og the leprechaun? I'm forgetting.
I think it's Og.
Yeah, because Og's looking for his pot of gold. And so to get kind of help in finding it, he tells all of the kids in town, hey, I'm looking for this gold. And they're like, well, what would you do with gold? And he's like, you could get whatever you want. And now comes in this piece of criticizing our consumerist type society in America.
Yeah.
There's a great song called Necessity that also talks about that, which is, you know, the greatest disappointment is always realizing what you need, because what you need is going to cost money. So it's like, yeah, have your vacations, have your thing, but guess what? At the end of the day, you still got to pay your rent.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the truth about a capitalistic society, is that you're born and you're already in the red.
That's
because
right. It's
expensive to live.
And I think it was such a smart decision to have a song like that sung by a black woman, because, you know,
great
just
point.
Historically, how it feels, and we talk about this a lot today, you know, how black women, it's like they're the bedrock, the backbone of society, and like they have to hold the weight
wisdom
of everyone else, right? And so to have a woman sing a song like that, especially in 1947, but it's still played in 2009, where it's just such a powerful moment that is done satirically, so it's still funny, but it's a very in your face moment. Yeah.
We should also say that the way that you make wishes in this show is that you have to stand over the gold where it's buried in the ground in order to say your wish. So since nobody knows where Finian buried his gold, it means that an accidental wish gets made, because Sharon is standing over it when she confronts the senator and basically says, I wish that you could see things from someone else's point of view other than your crazy racist bigoted POV.
Yeah.
And in that moment, he turns into a black man. This is the moment that we talked about was usually done with blackface, but with you guys, you switched out actors and had Tony winner Chuck Cooper now playing this racist senator.
Yeah.
Which had to be fantastic.
Oh, I mean, what a masterclass to watch, you know, because not only is he just an incredible actor, but watching a black man play a white man being a black man was just, I mean, it doesn't get better than that.
That's amazing. All right. So where should we go next in the plot?
So because Og is saying you can get whatever you want with gold. So then there's all the stuff where Sears and Roebuck come into.
That's right. Now we're going into, my gosh, another really
credit.
Fascinating piece of consumerism,
yeah,
is this idea of credit. Back in 1947, before our nation's deficit grew to be what the crazy number it is, they were already criticizing this idea of credit. Yeah, because everybody's like, well, we have the gold, and it's not Sears and Roebuck like it was in 1947. It's Shears and...
Oh, that's it.
What is it?
Roebuck... I was going to say Roblox. I have kids.
you have children.
Shears and
Robust.
Robust, that's it.
So Shears and Robust, which is like the catalog with all of the things, has heard that this community has gold buried somewhere. And so then they offer them free credit. I say in quotations, free.
Free.
So now everyone is living their best, oh, the Wells Fargo wagon life, dreaming of all of the things that they're going to buy on credit. And they do, and all of those things come, and then eventually, knock, 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 here comes Shears and Roba saying, okay, so now how are you going to pay for it? And they're like, what? We didn't know we had to pay for it. Once again, so crazy that this is part of the plot, but it is.
This, to me, was the main selling point for the revival in 2009, because we had just had the housing crisis of 2008.
The bubble that totally burst because of this very thing.
Correct.
You're so right.
Correct. It's literally predatory lending.
Wow. Yeah, that's what Shears and Robust did, is exactly what the housing market
Correct.
Had done. That, I just got chills all over thinking of how relevant that was.
Yeah. And it's sad because you're preying on people that don't know any better, right? In this show,
these are the sharecroppers who have just been happy doing their work.
Correct. And we've established in the beginning of the show that whatever Woody says is a good idea is a good idea. And of course, they've got Woody thinking, great. So he's like, says he, you know, like he's on the train for credit as well. And so everyone kind of follows suit. And then the next thing you know, we've got a bunch of stuff and no way to pay for it.
Pop.
Dirty pop. Yeah.
Seriously, dirty pop. All right. So then how do we get out of this mess?
How do we get out of this mess? A lot of Act Two was not the ensemble. I'll tell you that. How do we get out of this mess? I don't know, but I could tell you a lot of gossip.
I can tell you what everybody was doing and who. What I think happens, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that they think, oh, well, we need to use the gold to pay for all of this stuff. But the truth is, all of the interest in that area has led to a massive investment in their tobacco product that they've been creating from sharecropping. So now all of a sudden, they're making much more money from their sharecropping than before, which is how they then pay for what they had.
Okay. See, I don't even remember that.
Look. It probably happens in two lines.
While
you were going to the bathroom. The other thing is that the hidden gold is found by Susan.
Yes.
The dancer. And she does this whole dance. Did she do it by herself, or were you guys involved in that?
Oh, no. She did it all by... Well, she danced it by herself, but we had... what was his name? Guy... I can't think of Guy's last name, but he was like a Grammy Award-winning blues harmonica player.
Oh, wow.
And he was a member of the company. So the dance that she did was all him playing. Like, he was kind of like the music of her feet. And so she did this humongous ballet, just her. And, I mean, it was such a sight to behold. I mean, and Alina Fay was just like such a beautiful former ABT dancer. I mean, just a beautiful.
Oh, wow.
It's a beautiful moment in dance history, to be honest.
Oh, my gosh. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Woody and Sharon, the couple that, you know, were going to be and then weren't and then were, they actually, you know, Woody comes to his senses and realizes any fool should marry Kate Baldwin if they have a chance. So
I would marry Kate Baldwin.
Thank you. So Woody and Sharon get married. The senator comes into the wedding and says, you know, and tries to arrest Sharon for witchcraft because it's because of her that he was changed into a black man. Finian, however,
But he learned his lesson, though, because remember they sing the Begat, the four black.
Oh, yeah. Talk to us about that.
It's just an amazing number. I mean, honestly, like, because you finally have just four black guys on stage and hats and canes and, you know, singing about like what it's like to be a black man, you know, and how you deal with society at large like that. And that is really a turning point for the senator, because it's like he's learned to be human, funny, you know.
Imagine
it's finally his change of heart moment, which a lot of times is done in musicals, at least is done in like a big kind of ballad. And to have it done in kind of like, not quite a barbershop quartet, but in a quartet type up-tempo setting with a lot of dancing and intricate movement, it just kind of turns it on its head, the way in which it's done and the message at large. It turns it all on its head. And
well, the three other guys are bringing him into their community as well.
Correct.
And so we've talked so much about the importance of theater, live theater. but the idea of being with people, right? To connect and to understand community. Where they're coming from. Yeah.
Yeah.
Finian is the one who ultimately, Finian the dad, is the one who steps in and says, we can use one of the wishes from the gold to turn the senator back. So now with all of these wishes being used, Og is basically human. Like, he's so close to being completely mortal. He begs Sharon to be with him. She's like, no, I'm married to Woody now. However, right after Sharon breaks his heart, he sees Susan instead and realizes, oh, now I'm really attracted to her. Is this what it's like to be mortal?
Yes.
And we're like, yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much, especially for a man.
Yeah. Your heartbreak doesn't last as long as your next infatuation.
Yeah.
And thus begins his 11 o'clock number, which is another one of the most famous songs in the show, When I'm Not Near the Girl I Love. I want to read some of these because,
yeah,
my gosh.
Genius lyrics.
I'm confessing a confession, and I hope I'm not verbose. When I'm not close to the kiss I cling to the kiss that's close. Oh my gosh.
So good.
As I'm more and more immortal, I am more and more a case. When I'm not facing the face that I fancy the face I face. Who needs fireworks?
Honestly.
When you've got fireworks like that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Incredible.
The ear to hear something like that and to do it in such a funny, quirky way. It's genius.
So basically the senator, this is another one of, I guess, the black ketchup-y moments, is that the senator is turned white again, I guess, for learning his lesson. And I think people see that as maybe being black as a punishment and being white as a reward.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, it's theater and there has to be a suspension of disbelief. And I think that, you know, if you choose to go in looking at it like that, like, we can't change your mind. But I do think that you could also look at it as restoring what was.
Was. He was a white guy to begin with.
Expecting him to stay black. Again, I think it's people viewing the show through today's lens versus all we're doing is he learned his lesson, so now he's been restored. I never looked at it that way.
Gotcha. And, well, I agree.
Thank God.
The last wish that...
This would be really awkward.
But I'm glad you filled this out. The last wish that finally turns Og human is that the wish is made that Susan can talk.
Yes.
And so Susan, the amazing dancer, finally gets her voice. She ends up with Og. Woody ends up with Sharon. The senator's white again. And Finian, who unfortunately no longer has his gold, goes searching for his next adventure. It almost feels like it might be a heaven even.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's the vibe that I kind of got, you know, the look to the rainbow.
We didn't even talk about that song.
Yeah, oh, I know. It's so good. I love the song proper, right? You know, but I think there's something about the reprise that is what really, to me, gives it that very heavenly feel. Like, the end of his story is coming. Like, this was the adventure that he had to come on in order for his daughter to find love and for, you know, to save a town and to have a senator learn a lesson and to get a dancing mute talking. And, you know, like, I feel like his job is done. And so, yes, he's looking to the rainbow, but that's very much the sense that I got as well, which is, my time is done and I'll be going now.
I'll see you in Glacamora.
Yeah, one day. One fine day.
Oh, it's a bonker show.
It is.
But, like, has so much heart and so much perfect music and a really great integration of dance that, I don't know, I'm ready to see a production right now.
Yeah, and quite honestly, it's been a while. You know, I think if it's done well, it's done well. And I always think that music that sounds like that deserves some shelf life.
To be heard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Agreed. Thank you so much, Joe, for doing this with me. What a great time I've had chatting with you.
Of course. I loved it. It's, you know, you don't always get to reminisce about, you know, an old show that you were in. And this has just been delightful, truly. So thank you for having me.
I can't believe how much you remembered.
You know, it's funny. It's a lot of it's sense memory.
Yeah.
Because that's why I started singing like, his heart needs a plumber. Like, I can remember like, either what
that's
I was
your
singing
harmony
or
part.
What I heard at that moment in time, right? You know, it's kind of wild what your body just kind of goes into.
As always, if you have recommendations for shows you'd like us to cover on A Musical Theater Podcast, you better email me at amusicalpodcast@gmail.com. Please follow us on social media. We're on Twitter, whatever it's called, and Instagram and TikTok. We also have Patreon exclamation point, where we will be taking another visit, funny enough, to the Flop Shop. So join us for that. We also have our T Public store filled with designs. The profits we receive from those purchases goes to Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. So take a little trip around that shop. More than anything, so grateful you're part of this wonderful podcasting community. So share it with everyone else so that we can continue to grow our great little Ohana here. Hey, Joe, how do we follow you and what's up in your life?
So you can follow me. I'm on pretty much all social media except, well, I'm not on TikTok and I'm not on Twitter anymore. I left that rat's nest.
It's a dumpster fire.
I am at Joe Aaron Reed on Instagram, and Threads is, I think, the name that you were looking for.
Oh, thank you.
And yeah, Facebook, I'm Joe Aaron Reed. And then, yeah, this year, there were some things that were supposed to come out last year that didn't get to come out because of the actors and writers strike. So I do have a film that I'm involved in called The Holiday Exchange that'll be coming out later this year. And then I don't know that I'm actually allowed to tell you what it is, but I am on a couple episodes of a very hot HBO show that should be coming out relatively soon, which was supposed to air in the fall, which didn't. So yeah, keep your eyes peeled.
Amazing.
Yeah.
We will keep our eyes fully peeled. Everybody out there, thank you so much for listening, and happy Black History Month. Take a listen to Finian's Rainbow, as well as any other show that celebrates the amazing Black artists that have been part of our musical theater landscape. And remember, look to the rainbow.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.